All right, welcome back. 9:15 ESPN 97.5. Jonathan Fagan is joining us right now, talking some Rockets basketball and his new book, 100 Things Rockets Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. Jonathan, welcome in. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you guys?
The title sounds familiar, only there's one word that's different.
Well, yeah, it is part of a series of books around the country, 100 Things Lakers fans, Yankees fans, Cowboys fans, etc., should know and do before they die. And Triumph asked me to provide one for Rocket fans. And so that's what I did through last season. 100 things Rocket fans should know and do before they die.
Yeah. And neat stuff. And 100, was it hard to come up with 100 things?
It was hard to narrow it to 100 things.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, it was. You know, at first it seems hard. And you start doing the list and you know, Rudy T, Hakeem Olajuwon, the punt. You know, you get into the 70s pretty easy, pretty quick. And then when you start thinking of certain other things that either are of interest or will be good in some years later to look back and say, you know, what happened? Then you start to get up to about 110, 120 and start second-guessing yourself a lot. Gee, should I have done this? Should I have, you know, for instance, I did a chapter on the barnstorming years when the Rockets first started in Houston and they were playing home games in El Paso and Waco and San Antonio, and they were home games. This was a chapter that Doug Biggers, the photographer from 26, suggested I do, just sitting around one day waiting during the playoffs. Yeah, you should do that. And so this is right near the end when I was at the deadline, and there's always more ideas. I'm sure there'll be some people will say you should have done that. You know, so, nah, there's way more than 100, but hopefully the ones you want to see, the ones that right now people might say, well, I really want to read about, hopefully those will be in there.
What's one that didn't make the list that you wish that could be in there or was just right at the cutoff?
You know, why when I started saying that, I tried to remember that, and I don't recall exactly which ones were the I really wish I could remember. I'm sure there were some players from the 70s and 80s. I like the Jones, Major Jones, Colorful Jones, their time together, or not time together, or the Barrys, a better example. Rick Barry, and then the 1 year with John Barry and 1 year with Brent Barry. I think we decided not those because we're talking one season. And so those maybe didn't make the list that I intended to when I first made a list.
Did partying with James Harden after a playoff elimination game at Onyx make the list?
I wasn't invited, shockingly.
You know? That one didn't make it. Okay.
That's not making a list.
Okay. No, that's not making the list. Jonathan Fagan with us here on ESPN 97.5. Yeah, I'm looking through some great memories. The Eddie Johnson shot, the dagger by Stockton, Mad Max, Kenny, the shot, the kiss of death.
What about the win streak with no Yao? Where did that end up in the book at all? Because that was kind of special.
Guess what chapter, too? I mean, chapter 22.
Is that right?
That one was in there. Yao played, what was it, the first 10 games, I believe, of the win streak. But that was so remarkable because things kept happening and they kept finding ways to win, you know, and that was one I covered. You know, I didn't cover this when they first moved, you know, not personally, when they first moved to Texas. But, you know, that one I did cover. I don't remember if I used it, this anecdote, because it's kind of a little about myself, so I probably didn't, but I so vividly remember back then when they were losing to New Orleans all the time, the Chris Paul, David West, Tyson Chandler version of that team. And they go in there and they win that game, and Battier is icing. And like he always did after the game, before he would talk, and I looked at him, and I didn't say anything. And I just kind of made a face, like, can you believe this? And he looked at me and said, I know. Like, we knew this thing is going to go. This team had learned how to win. And so that was like game 8. And we knew, this win streak is going to go for a while.
Yep. Jonathan Fagan with us here on ESPN 97.5. Where's Gene's call of the clock not starting?
That's in there, I think. So I think I need people to read the book and tell me what's in it. Because you know, in the months that it took to put together. I do seem to remember, oh, it's in the chapter about him. Yeah, there is a chapter about Gene Peterson and Jim Foley. And, yeah, that's in there.
Yeah, it should be. And that particular one, there was a couple. There's some. There was one against Utah, which was start the clock. There was one against – where did he get kicked? I know you're, I'm sure you have it, where he got kicked out of a game by an official.
I don't remember that one. The one that I do also remember including was San Antonio when they scored 94. No, 93.
Yeah.
And they scored
a tip
too late, really, after the buzzer.
It was
shouted out something we can't shout out on the air.
Yeah, he yelled at Steve Javy, I think he did, on the air. He was screaming at Steve Javy. It was unbelievable. How about your the Rockets and the Twin Towers, that version of the Rockets, the 86
Rockets?
That's
early.
What did you talk about there?
Well, just the hopes of it. I some of the Patterson comments when they put all the hope and expectation for what that would do to not just Rockets history, but to change the sport. And remember, that was the thought at the time. This will change basketball forever. And, you know, the context now of, well, you know, putting 2 7-footers together, although Hakeem really wasn't, but putting the 2 7-footers together now would seem like, well, that's not how you play. But at the time, you know, how much other people even around the league thought this would be the new dominant team. And, of course, that leads to what happens in 86, where that was a great team that could have, that what they could have been had they been able to stay together, if not for the suspensions and Samson's injury. And there's a chapter that does go into how Samson's career changed with the fall in Boston. And so there's a lot of stuff that maybe some new Rocket fans don't know. Like, you'll know Ralph Sampson, you know, Hall of Famer, 7'4", all the, but how did it go wrong? How did it change? You know, there's a lot that maybe people who have come to the Rockets either in the Clutch City years or the Yao McGrady years or the most recent years might not recall that. And it is interesting when you start talking about all this stuff, there really are these distinct eras of Rockets basketball, but they so often involve some of the biggest names, most recognizable stars in the sport. From the Akeem, the first Akeem years, the Clutch City years, Yao McGrady, the current Harden team.
Well, Francis was a big deal.
There's a chapter about how the Harden trade happened. Like, what, you know, the thing I like about that one, if you've ever dealt with Daryl Morey around a trade time, he always thinks, no chance. It's not going to happen. We're never going to get the trade. Nah, I don't think so. We're trying, but nah. That one, Gerson Rosas said, this one's going to happen. He sent a text to Daryl, said, no, this one's going to happen. And, of course, it did.
Yeah, I think that's one of the interesting things is when you look at the Rockets, Les Alexander during his reign, which included, you know, from 92 on, I think in that 91 maybe on, they never, ever shied away from making not just splashy moves, but moves that were intended to pick up the biggest names. And so you're right. And you didn't mention, you know, Scottie Pippen, Charles Barkley, James Harden, Steve Francis on draft day.
Matt Maloney.
Not Matt Maloney. But, yeah, you're right. Those are, and of course, you got Yao Ming in the draft pick. But, yeah, some major, major names, but they also took major, major chances. So a book like this is going to have a little bit more meat to it than maybe some other franchises might.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it would be harder to put together 100 Things Bucks. But it was... you know, there's so many. You know, and there is a thread through a lot of them. I did find Samson comes up in several different ones. Akeem comes up in a lot of them. You know, I did the first chapter on Rudy. And the argument was Rudy sort of spans the different eras more than anyone. From those first years when Rockets came to Houston, and it was viewed as an experiment. Could professional basketball work in Texas? That's really the attitude about it at that time. And he goes from that to his playing days to some of the big moments. You know, the Kermit Washington punch was an enormous moment in basketball history, through the Choke City, Clutch City Rockets. And what I liked writing about, what he thought, what he's thinking on that flight to Phoenix. That, you know, he saw the headlines. Back then, the headlines in the paper were everything. He saw, as we all know, Choke City in the giant letters. What he was thinking of his legacy, his responsibility at that time, and how he got out of it. You know, how he, and the idea that he had on the plane, which was when he got there, he to Phoenix, he did the video, not of how they blew the lead, but how they built it in the first place. How great they were up until they were terrible. And the purpose of that was to sort of give the attitude of, hey, you could do this. Look, this is you guys building this lead. And there were other things in there, too, that people didn't know, like why he ran so much pick and roll in the series against the Knicks, which why are you running pick and roll there? You're going to beat up a king. But what it really did is it kept him fresher to where he has that game six and game seven. Because what Rudy's idea and Rudy, the way he felt like people were not getting it, even his friends didn't understand why you're running what you're doing in that series. But then the way it paid off in a championship.
Well, one other question to see if it made it in there. You know, it's kind of famous behind the scenes that, and I think it's probably been made public, I don't know, but Carol Dawson was influential in convincing Rudy Tomjanovich to take the job after Don Chaney, yeah, was out. They wanted Rudy to take it, and Rudy's like, I'm not ready to be a coach. I don't know enough. I don't know enough about the X's and O's stuff. I don't. And Carol Dawson, you know, the story is Carol Dawson said, you're going to do this, and I'll help you. And that they spent a bunch of time in Galveston getting ready for the season, and it was like a crash course where Carol taught Rudy the things he needed to know. It was extremely influential as a bench coach for him. How much of Carol Dawson got put in there? I'm curious.
Well, that anecdote is in, I think it's definitely in the CD chapter. There's a chapter CD. But I believe that's also in the Rudy chapter. And the Galveston stuff happened later because the coaching change was during the season.
Right.
And the way it went, Patterson came in and said, look, I know you guys are going to fight me on this, but this is happening. We're firing Don. And as you said, Rudy said, you know, I'm not the coach. I don't want to be the coach. CD said, look, if you don't do this, we're all out of here. That's how he convinced them to do it. But CD, who is to this day the most direct, plain-spoken, great communicator you might ever deal with, he sat with his friend and he said, we'll do this together. We'll make this happen. You have to do this. And he convinced him right there, you know, when Don Chaney was getting fired. But Rudy did not want to do it. And he's talked to me about that several times. He never saw himself that way. But he had the background. I mean, after he played, he did scouting, and he always kept that. He kept the humility of a hard-working day-to-day scout and the knowledge that comes from really examining. That's why he was such a film nut. When he was a coach, he would just study, study, study. And that's what made him such a really great coach. Guys would come in here, veteran players, and you see, I never knew when I was on another team the way Rudy could change the play a foot or two. And he'd have you stand 2 feet to the right, and all of a sudden, that's why you're open. And that's why I'm getting this open shot. The detail, I mean, Rudy, that was never the image. The image was players, coach, good guy, gave guys a lot of respect and empowered them, and all that stuff is true. But he was a really great X's and O's guy. And it came from some of the background that he built in the years before he became coach. Not the work habits, but also what he learned. And even he did not maybe understand that until he became a coach, the head coach.
100 Things Rockets Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die. That's the book. All right, Jonathan, before you go, how long is it going to take this team to get on? I know any transition, LeBron, you know, now we got Melo, no Ariza, Ennis coming in, you know, different. It's a different team, and they're going to have to play differently. How long is it going to take for them to come together?
It's going to take a while. It took a while last year, which people tend to forget, but they were like 18th defensively until late December. they're going to be around 18 to 20, 22 defensively for quite a while because the defensive style they have requires great chemistry, great cohesion and communication. They don't have that yet, and it's going to take a while. It's not about the guys replacing Ariza and Bamute yet. It's not about that at all because you can look at the performance when they have five guys on the court who were here and excelled together last year, and the defense isn't quite there. You know, so it's not about the guys who are new, but they're still sitting over the bench watching during some stretches. It's the knee-jerk reaction. People everywhere are going to say, oh, you know, they let Ariza go and they let Bamute go. Well, maybe that will eventually be an issue, but it's not now. Right now, they all need to defend better than they have and help the helper. When you're switching as much as they do, and then there's some late possession double teams, you got to be quick, helping the helper be on point. They're not there yet. A lot of the league isn't. You look around the league, and you can see some stuff that just, wow, it's definitely October. And they're there. They need to find some wins as they're getting to that point. But you remember last year, they were 5-3 with two losses to Memphis. You know, they have a chance to be right around that 8-10 games in. So it's going to be a project. I always use the Chuck Daly line. You judge your team 20 games into the season. He said that between championships. Or actually what he said was, you don't know your team until it's 20 games into the season. Well, we don't know this team in three games. We'll have a lot better idea 10 to 15, and then you kind of really know things 20.
Chris Paul, you know all his teammates hate Chris Paul too, right?
You know, that's not been the case here.
No.
I think if you're a fat guy, he's probably a tough teammate. But that's not been the case here at all.
Oh, so no. Chris Paul's a body shamer.
How about that?
Well, you know what? It's basketball. You know what? Be in shape.
Get in shape. Get in shape then.
Stop being a loser.
I can see Chris Paul get pissed off at Big Baby.
Now, how did you know I meant Big Baby?
Because.
Just a good guess.
Why'd you go right to that?
Because Big Baby came out with his, you know, he's a terrible, whatever, Big Baby. When you were really crappy and just eating every day instead of playing basketball? Yeah, I could imagine Chris Paul would get on your ass.
And, you know, for whatever it's worth, right? I wasn't around the Clippers day after day after day, but J.J. Redick wanted to come here. DJ wanted to come here. DeAndre Jordan wanted to come here. You know, those guys weren't like, thank God, right? We got rid of that guy. You know, so take that for whatever it's worth. But we do know that for a fact. That at least a couple of his teammates in Los Angeles wanted to be his teammate in Houston.
Yeah.
Right. All right, man, Jonathan, we appreciate it. 100 things Rockets fans should know and do before they die. Out where you can buy books, I imagine.
Yeah, it's Barnes & Noble. I'm doing a book signing at the River Oaks Barnes & Noble on Saturday, but Amazon.com or Triumph.com, wherever quality books are sold.
Yeah, what time's your signing? What time's the signing on Saturday?
I think 1 o'clock.
Okay, there it is, Barnes & Noble. They're in River Oaks on Saturday, 1 o'clock. Jonathan, thanks. We appreciate it as always.
Well, thank you, guys. I really enjoyed it.
All right, Jonathan Fagan right here on ESPN 97.5.